Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Bob, Dave, and more. Again, if you have questions for John, you can text him into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. And John, if you happen to be watching on the video stream at 710sports.com, you'd notice there's another face in the studio with me. Dave Wyman is here.
Oh, really?
How about that?
Is this like the first time there's now been two hosts in the building at the same time?
I believe so.
Yeah, we're pioneers.
Yeah.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah.
We're the guinea pigs. We're going to see how it works with us.
Bob, he wanted a play date.
Yeah. And I was getting lonely, John.
We're doing here.
Yeah.
I didn't. Well, I am glad the two of you are together. Now the next one's to get Jim there.
That's right.
We're working on it. I don't think Jim wants to go. He wants to bring his dog, and they won't let him.
So. Well, I can understand that.
We're probably a month away or something like that.
Yeah. So, John, let's talk about it. We got the news that Marquise Blair and Bruce Irvin both suffer season-ending knee injuries. They'll both require surgery. This is a defense that was already having a ton of problems in these first two games. How devastating is this?
It's not good. I mean, because Blair had played so well at the nickel. I mean, I guess the fortunate thing is there's enough depth at linebacker and enough depth at safety to be able to cover for it. But then what you worry about is the next couple injuries. I mean, that's the one thing that you give John Snyder a lot of credit for, because here it is. They had four outside linebackers for two spots, a weak side linebacker and strong side linebacker. So they're covered there, because now they can probably go to either Cody Barton, but more likely they'll go to, they'll have KJ Wright, and they'll move him over to the strong side and then go, and fill the one spot. And then the other one is, of course, I mean, because Blair was the nickel, they still have Lano Hill, who had a good game yesterday, to at least be the backup. They'll get Diggs back after the ejection. And then Ugo Amani did a good job in the slot. If they need anything else, they can simply put Trey Flowers over at the outside and have Quentin Dunbar do the slot. So they're covered there. The thing that's going to hurt the most is losing Bruce Irvin now at the Leo position, because now they're thinner at Leo. They don't have Daryl Taylor, and there's no timetable when he's going to come off the PUP. That doesn't sound good. I mean, you have Benson Maioa out there playing 65 plays. That's almost too much. But in the end, you just have to make do on what was, I think, the biggest injury day I could ever remember.
Yeah, it was. And you look around the league, and we'll get to that, the Niners. But, and I can a few people have texted about this, and Bob and I kind of talked about it before the show. Clay Matthews does play linebacker, and, that Bruce Irvin did play that, and he can also come off the edge. But, what's his status? Because a few people were asking about Clay Matthews.
He's still available. I mean, I think he put a price tag on. My understanding, the price tag was around $5 million, and he didn't get it. And so he's still out there, and he still wants to play football. But, again, he's got a price tag on it. And so we'll see. But I have to think they've got to reach out and strongly consider it. He's already missed two game checks, so it's like, okay, it's going to be a little bit less than the $5 million. But they've got to figure out something, because, you don't want to run out of the position you need to pass rush, because now what this team has become is it's become more of a blitzing team. Now they're blitzing like what 30-35% of the time, and that's so different for a Pete Carroll defense. But the good thing is they have Jamal Adams. I mean, Jamal Adams continues to be the how about the fact that he's like the main pass rusher right now, aside from Benson Maioa and maybe a little bit on LJ Collier. I mean, because he's got two sacks, he had a couple hits on the quarterback, he blitzed, I don't know if it was the 11 times that he blitzed last week, but I mean, he has such a force you just kind of shake your head about how good he is. I know they had a cornerback blitz or two, so they are blitzing more.
John, with Quandre Diggs, do you think he just gets a fine or no fine, no suspension?
I don't think he gets a suspension, because it's kind of like the one Jadeveon Clowney had last year in the Philadelphia playoff game. It wasn't an intentful one. I mean, it wasn't like he was purposely targeting. It just that it was helmet to helmet, and it's a simple thing. And I know that Pete wasn't too happy about the fact that it was a penalty, but I think, hey, if you hit helmet on helmet, simple thing. You have to pay the price for it, because they're trying to limit that. I mean, you saw last year in the Carson Wentz hit. I mean, It was a little bit more vicious than the one that Diggs had, but still, it wasn't. There was nothing intentful in what Clowney did, but it did damage because Wentz had to eventually, you know, shake his head and realize, wait a second, I've got a concussion, and he was out the rest of the game. And Josh McCown was out there, you know, with his AARP card, trying to at least you know, get the plays going and, you know, try to get everything there.
Hey, John, as far as your time watching Russell Wilson, is this the best he's been? I know it's only two games, but to pick out a two-game period where he's looked better than this is tough. Not saying it's not there. I just am not exactly sure where it would be.
I'll take it to another level. I mean, this was some of the best quarterbacking play I've ever seen. I mean, that's how good it is. I mean, he's putting up historical-type numbers on what he's been able to do. I mean, two games, 84.5% completions, 9 touchdown passes. The fact that, you know, he went against the best coverage secondary in football and put those kind of yards on. It was, what, 284 or something like that on
288.
Yards? 288 for yards, 75% completions. And then, you know, him willing to challenge the defensive player of the year and being able to succeed, because we can talk about the battle that DK Metcalf and Stephon Gilmore had, because it was about as violent, I think, as I've seen a cornerback and a wide receiver, and that's from both ends of it. But who got the better of it? And the answer was DK Metcalf and Russell Wilson, because you got 5 catches, 92 yards, and a big touchdown that helped win the game.
Well, I don't know if it was as vivid on television, but that fight between Gilmore and DK, and it went over to the bench area, it was mayhem over there for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Hard to see what was going on TV, like who was in the middle of it.
Yeah, they got locked up, and oh, man, DK was hot. He was so mad, and there wasn't a penalty on that play, was there?
No, there was
no.
Yeah,
no,
I mean, I was surprised by that, but I mean, not that I wanted it to be, but yeah, it was, and it was two competitors going at it, and you saw something from DK Metcalf I didn't know he had, but I'm totally with you, John. I thought the first touchdown pass, we were talking about that, where he steps up, goes to his right, throws across his body, every bit as good as anything Patrick Mahomes has ever done. So, yeah, it's just, and against that group, that was really good stuff, and loved seeing it. Yeah, the Diggs thing, John, I mean, like it's just frustrating to me because it's an accident. And I thought that, didn't you get a warning?
No.
I thought that I don't remember
different times, because you remember concussions are such a big issue right now. It's not like
yeah, but he was fine, John.
Was that
N'Keal Harry was fine afterwards?
Yeah, but how do you know that the next one was not going to knock anybody out? Again, we had one of the worst injury days in NFL history yesterday, because I think by the time we sort this all out, there's going to be 25 to 30 starters that are going to be out and out for maybe a long period of time, and this was expected. I mean, you know, J.C. Treader of the Players Association talked about the last time that there was no off-season program, and you know, he predicted what ended up happening in week 2. You know, you have ACL injuries. So far, we have at least 7 ACL injuries. There was, what, 2 Achilles injuries. There was, you know, there was a 45% increase in 2011 during the lockout with no offseason program for hamstring injuries. And so now you're seeing pec injuries. We'll talk eventually about the 49ers. I mean, it was devastating what happens. And so, you know, if you can, because remember, they keep on changing the rules to limit, you know, the helmet hits because they don't want helmet hits on kickoff returns. They're trying to protect the players as best possible. And because you're talking about scrambling a brain, I think that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it was an accident.
Yep.
Obviously, he doesn't want to get kicked out. So, yeah, if you're going to kick people out for making a mistake or making an accident, you know, I mean, maybe the guy lowers his head. All right, I'll stop now. John, how about my guy Tyrod Taylor? I'm worried about him. He had, like, chest pain before a game.
Yeah, I guess he had trouble breathing. And apparently what we find out now that, you know, his ribs were bothering him the other day. And so in the pregame, he took an injection. And apparently he had a bad reaction to the injection to a point where here it is, you know, they're doing the coin toss and he comes up and he's having trouble breathing. It's like, I can't do anything. I got to go to the locker room. And they ended up taking him to the hospital. And so, you know, I don't know what kind of reaction that was, but it was serious enough that here's, you know, Justin Herbert, you know, just standing there being the backup quarterback, having never played in an NFL game. And it, right before the start of the game, like 10 seconds before, he says, oh, by the way, you're starting. It's like, oh, really? And he comes up and he plays even with Patrick Mahomes through the entire game and eventually took it into overtime. I mean, what an incredible performance that is. Now, Anthony Lynn did come back and say that Tyrod Taylor will be the starter when he's 100% healthy, but he put that clause in there, 100% healthy. So you have to wonder, you have to think that Taylor's probably going to miss this week. Herbert will start, and again, he did well, but just a weird, weird one. Just like, you know, the Rakyon Sim story in Indianapolis, the cornerback, he has some kind of an illness, and so they had to take him to the hospital. Now, we still don't know what that illness is, but for the Colts cornerback, he had to miss the game.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, man, Herbert might have that job for good now. I mean,
plus, he's knocking out linebackers, Dave.
Oh, yeah. Bob showed me this video I had not seen. I don't know if you saw it, John.
No,
but
I did not.
Yeah, there's a linebacker from Kansas City came up and put a big shot on him, and Herbert
popped. Oh, no,
right
I
up.
Do remember that. Yeah, because that was Wilson, right? Damian Wilson,
yes,
got him on the sideline. Yeah. And of course, you know, he got up right away, and Wilson's the one who's like, "Whoa, I got to lay here for."
He
a
looked
little
a little
bit.
Rigid.
A little rigid, yeah.
He had the zombie arms.
Yeah, no, I did see that. Yeah.
All right, Professor. It might take the whole rest of the segment to bring us up to date on the 49ers injuries, and they signed. This shows you how desperate they are. They signed Ziggy Ansah today too.
Yeah, and they gave him a 1-year deal that can be up to $3 million. But do you hear all the other problems that they have aside from the injuries? First off, their MRI machine, you know, or I guess they have an MRI, because again, they're on the road going down to Greenbrier. So the MRI truck broke down.
Oh,
so
boy.
Like, for example, they're still waiting to get the MRIs on on Nick Bosa and Solomon Thomas. And we already know what the answer is, that they're going to probably be out with ACL tears. But so that didn't make it down. So that was delayed. And then before they left in San Francisco on Friday, something hit into their plane, the team plane.
What?
Like another plane or some card or whatever it is hit into the team plane.
Gotcha.
And so they had a long delay till they had to, you know, go on and get another plane to be able to get to New York.
I thought you were talking about in midair. I'm like,
bird
strike.
It was Friday before they got on the plane, but, you know, they had to go get a different plane. But the injury thing is just incredible because, you know, and they're in just such bad shape too, because they're down technically 8 starters. We've already mentioned Bosa. He's out for the year with the ACL tear. Solomon Thomas is out for the year probably with an ACL tear. You know, they've got a neck injury. It's a back injury for D Ford. He didn't play, so he missed the game. Then Raheem Mostert ended up getting an MCL sprain, so he's out 2 to 4 weeks. Tevin Coleman, a backup running back, he got a knee injury, so he's going to miss a week or two. Then you've got Richard Sherman on injured reserve. I mean, this thing is just absolutely devastating what happened.
And they still killed the Jets.
And don't forget Garoppolo.
What's that? And Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, it's interesting they're saying, you know, because they initially said it was a high ankle sprain, which is 4 to 6 weeks. But now, for whatever reason, Kyle Shanahan's saying he may play on Sunday. We'll see about that. But they were blaming the turf. But now we find out at the MetLife Stadium that the turf has been checked out like 20 times and by independent people, and it came out fine. But, you know, that's now 3 ACL tears by 2 different teams and players on 2 different teams in that stadium, because Zach Banner tore his ACL. He was a right tackle you know, from this area who ended up going to the Steelers and getting the start at right tackle. So he blows out an ACL. You got Bosa, but they've almost got nothing left on the defensive line. It's incredible because, you know, they made the trade for DeForest Buckner, traded him to Indianapolis. Now there's no Bosa. Now there's no Thomas. And it's just, you know, here's Ford, who's always hurt. He's out. So at some point it's going to catch up. But the Jets are so good that they lose by 18 points to a depleted 49er team. And they got beat by Jerick McKinnon, the Jet, on a 3rd and 31. A 3rd and 31, and he gained 55 yards.
Yeah. Adam Gase probably has the hottest seat. If it's not him, it's got to be
Matt Patricia.
I guess. Well, what about Dan Quinn? What in the heck happened in that game, John? I mean, they were dominating. Dallas comes all the way back. Then the onside kick, which was a really interesting kick by Zuerlein, but all the Atlanta players are sitting there watching it like they had to wait for it to go 10 yards. Like they just lost track of oh, wait, we kicked the ball. We can touch this whenever we want.
I felt like nobody wanted to take a shot at it and fumble it, you know, so maybe that was it. But
whatever it was stupid and bad. But then you look at the fact they blew a 29-10 lead.
Is he done? How much slack? We love the guy, but is it over?
It's still starting to look that way because they're in deep trouble at 0-2. We'll see what New Orleans does tonight to see if they're going to be two games behind. But, I mean, you think about the idea that they're so vulnerable on defense, and he's a defensive coach who has taken the team to the Super Bowl. Hey, you can't blame Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan came up, and he put 39 points on the board, which that's, I think, pretty good. But then you give up 40 points, and particularly the fact that Matt Ryan got him out to a 29-10 lead, and this is with Julio Jones playing with a sore hamstring and not looking as good. I mean, and Matt does his job. The defense doesn't do his job. And at some point, there may be no job for Dan Quinn.
Your guy Kirk Cousins struggling. Ooh. John, 11-26, 113 yards,
three picks,
three interceptions, unbelievable. And they're 0-2 now. Holy smokes, what's going on in Minnesota?
Well, apparently, with the injuries, not the injuries, but the fact that overestimated what was going to happen with them on defense because, they lost five key players. I mean, two defensive linemen, Linville Joseph, and then, of course, they lost to Everson Griffin, and they got younger on the defensive line. And then, of course, they made a trade for Unique Ndakwe. But where they're really exposed right now is that they lost their top three cornerbacks, and they've gone so young in replacing them that all quarterbacks are doing is just attacking those corners and getting it, and there's no pass rush because Danielle Hunter, he's on the injured reserve. You can double-team Unique Ndakwe, and then to make matters worse, now technically they're down two linebackers because Ben Gideon, their middle linebacker, he's on PUP, and then they find out today that they lose Anthony Barr, a Pro Bowl caliber linebacker. He tore a pec and he's done for the season. So they're in big trouble and in danger of being out of it early.
Professor, I heard part of your show this morning. I'm so proud of you. I could scream because you're starting to come around on Gardner Minshew and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Boy, they almost pulled it off there in Tennessee, John. Somebody got their paw up there and knocked down Gardner Minshew's pass, and it was intercepted. But I thought for all the world they were going to come back and at least force overtime there in Nashville.
Well, like one of the things I wrote for the Washington Post and see, which you'll like, and Dave and Bob will be upset with me for doing this, but it's like, what Gardner looks like is what you would expect out of Baker Mayfield. I mean, his movement, his ability to lead.
That's not good.
What they expected when they made him the first pick in the draft.
Yeah.
And so it's like, that's what you expected. And then he's come in on a bad football team. This team is not good. And, he was able to, come and be competitive in two consecutive games. I mean, he beat Indianapolis, which was huge. And then they come back and, a 33-30 game against Tennessee. And you think, what's Tennessee's strength? It's their defense. They got Jadeveon Clowney. They've got other good players on defense. And he puts 30 points on them. That's incredible.
What about Clowney, John? Two tackles. No tackles for loss, no sacks.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it's like that's the thing that put him in a tough spot. And again, he's the one who put himself in a tough spot because he did as bad of a negotiating job as certainly Le'Veon Bell. The only difference is at least he's going to get $12 million out of it or $13 million out of it as opposed to nothing that Le'Veon got for the year that he sat out the whole season. But, he's still trying to get himself, I guess, in shape. And, I still contend, he's more valuable and better in a 4-3 defense, because now he has to, worry about coverage and doing things like that. Mike Vrabel was able to get him to three Pro Bowls as an outside linebacker in a 3-4, but, say what you want. It's like they give up 30 points. The only thing I can say totally is that, what you're looking at is that now after 2 weeks, who's winning the battle? Is it defense or offense? And it's pretty evident to say it's defense, it's offense, because now, there was 175 offensive touchdowns scored so far in the 31 games played, and that's an NFL record for 2 weeks into the season. And we'll see how many are going to be scored tonight. And I think that scoring right now is like over 25 points per team, and that's all ridiculously high because, you're getting games now 50 plus. I mean, it's taken the over in so many of these games.
John, the 425 wants to know, they said, hi, Professor. Is it time to be worried about Jamal Adams' coverage skills or lack thereof? He was clearly exposed against New England. John Stillwell, UW 1990.
Yeah, he was, but he can fix that up. I mean, let's put it this way. Who is right now the best defensive player on this team?
That'd be Jamal Adams.
That would be Jamal Adams. And I'm saying that with Bobby Wagner having an incredibly good start to his season. I mean, but the fact that Jamal Adams is all over the field, and of course, I mean, obviously there was not communication errors, but, you know, good strategy, I guess, in the sense that, you know, what you saw Bill Belichick and Joshy Boy McDaniels do is try to isolate Julian Edelman on Jamal Adams. And here's Jamal Adams. He had a dislocated finger and he's a little banged up and all that stuff. But his ability to make plays is just remarkable.
Hey, John,
I wouldn't worry about it, in other words.
Yeah, I think he'll be okay. Really tragic before the game. James White, that whole thing. And when Devin McCourty got his pick, you could hear it actually on the highlight. He went down and said 2-8. And I saw all the, you know, because he's number 28. And
you could hear it on the broadcast.
Yeah, we're thinking of you and everything. And then, yeah, I don't know if we have any update on that. But
no, of course, he's was a Miami police officer, but he died in a crash. We're still waiting for an update on his mom because his mom was in critical condition in the hospital yesterday. We didn't get an update today on that, but just a sad story. And you can see from all around the league, I mean, from Pete Carroll to Russell Wilson. Tom Brady, Matt Patricia, they all mention James White and the family, because again, that's such a tragic thing to happen.
Well, you can tell by the outpouring of what he meant to everybody, or what he means to everybody as a teammate, meant in past tense as far as Brady.
I didn't know his name was Sweetfeet, though. Did you?
Yeah, I didn't either.
Russell Wilson tweeted out Sweetfeet,
his Twitter name or something like that.
Twitter handle.
There you go, Bob. Thank you for that correction.
All right, Professor, Monday Night Football, we got the Raiders hosting the Saints. The Raiders are a 4-point home underdog, John. We know how valuable that is on Monday Night Football, at least historically.
Yeah, it is, but of course, I mean, you know, it's no fans in the stands and no noise in the crowd or anything like that. But here's going to be the interesting thing to kind of follow. How are the Saints going to be without Michael Thomas, who has the high ankle sprain? That's going to be the curious thing, because what you're looking at right now is that the NFC West is now looking to be one of the best divisions we've seen in a long time. You've got three teams 2-0, including the Seahawks. You've got San Francisco 1-1 with all the injuries. They're 7-1, and the last time you saw a 7-1 start was 2002, when the AFC West got off to a 7-1 start. And I saw the 538, which does an analytics evaluation, actually predicted that four teams in this division could make the playoffs. They had Seattle 11-5, 10-6 for the Rams, 9-7 for the Cardinals and the 49ers. We'll see if that comes true. But if New Orleans is not going to be the same offense without their main receiver, that could, you know, hurt their chances, New Orleans, of having the number one seed.
John, we appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, if you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, it's time for our player spotlight. Ugo Amadi is going to join us next, talk about what it was like to be thrown into the fire when Marquise Blair was injured yesterday. That is coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. What a huge win for the Seahawks last night, 35-30 over the Patriots. And they may not have been able to do it without this guy who got thrown into action and came up with the second largest amount of tackles, 8 tackles on the night. Talking about Ugo Amadi, who's with us now. Ugo, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
We're doing really well. Give me your thoughts on that game, because, you know, guys were going down. Unfortunately, Marquise Blair hurts himself. Diggs gets tossed out of the game. You get thrown into action. Is that an exciting feeling? Is it sort of panic? Because I don't know how many reps you get during the week, and you got thrown into the fire last night.
It definitely was an exciting feeling, just because, you know, our motto around here is to always just stay ready, even for the guys who are just not getting as much reps as the ones the starters are. And, you know, I'm sorry to hear about what happened to my brother Marquise. You know, it was very unfortunate to him, but, you know, my prayers are going out to him for speedy recovery. But, you know, that game right there was just very, thrilling. You know, I'm sure you guys were all excited watching from the TV. You know, I know you guys are feeling the pressure through the TV as well, but it was just an exciting game, you know, to be a part of, you know, for me to be put in the fire, you know, God willing, I was able to persevere through all those snaps I was playing.
Yeah, Ugo, you were all over the field, man. That was really fun to watch. And forgive me because I haven't gone back and looked at it. Were you in on the field on that last play where you stopped him?
Oh no, that was our goal line package right there. So no, I wasn't in.
But how about the energy afterwards? I mean, that had to have been, and you know, I couldn't help but think, man, it's too bad there wasn't a crowd here because it probably would have been one of the louder moments at CenturyLink. But you guys made plenty of noise. Talk about that celebration with the defense and your whole team after.
Man, that celebration with my team and after that stop was like when your mom makes pizza rolls for you when you come home, man. Like, it was just so thrilling. Oh, my gosh, man. It's like, oh, my gosh. Like, we got it. Like, super excited, you know. Such a job well done. That's just a certain way how you show how you can finish.
All right, Ugo, what's in those pizza rolls that make them so good?
Man, it's just that warm, you know, that warm sauce feeling in there, you know. So you take one bite out of it, you dip it in some ranch, oh, you're good to go for the rest of the night.
I love talking to you, Ugo. Hey,
I appreciate it.
What's it been like for you this year? Because in training camp, I mean, you were the guy. You were supposed to be, that was your job, the nickel job. And then we heard a lot about Marquise Blair. And how have you persevered and dealt with that?
I've just been taking it one day at a time, getting 1% better, you know, and, you know, making the most of that opportunity, whether it was special teams or on defense, you know. And always showing my coaches that they can always trust in me no matter what happens, you know. I can always pull through for these guys. And not only just for the coach, for my teammates as well. And I never want to let my teammate down, and that's always something I've had on my chip on my shoulder that I always carry. I just, you know, it always will hurt my feelings more when I let my teammate down, you know. So I wanted to pull through for my guys.
What was it like out there going up against a guy like Cam Newton, who's no secret to this team? Obviously, it felt like you played the Panthers every single year. But seeing him in this offense, Bill Belichick on the sideline, they were moving up and down the field. So give me a sense of what it was like with him out there and how difficult that was.
You know, it's always hard to stop a running quarterback because they're always unaccounted for in a defense. So, you know, when you have a mobile quarterback, you know, you got to call certain things that you usually wouldn't just to stop the run game, but then it opens up other stuff behind it as well. But, you know, he's a good quarterback. He's been thriving in that type of system since he was in college. And, you know, my hats off to him, man. He really did it. He really carried that team. And but, you know, our defense, we stuck together and we pulled through, you know, to get the W.
Ugo, you looked so much more comfortable this year coming back your second year. Tell us about how much, I mean, did it slow down for you? What was the difference between your rookie year, which you played well, but, I mean, you come back your second year and it just looked like you were a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, it definitely slowed down for me a lot this year, going on the field again and being able to read things better and, you know, and focus on with my eyes a lot better was a huge key for me in the off season. And, you know, that play with Devontae Adams with me last year, you know, that was like a huge chip on my shoulder, man. I just like, I can never have that feeling again. And I'm glad I had that happen to me last year because I would have known what to have gotten better at during the off season. So, you know, I just praise God for the glory he's allowed me to achieve and accumulate.
Ugo, I saw you on the post-game show last night with Paul Silvey, the fifth quarter show. You were wearing a Mike Tyson T-shirt. Yeah, what does he mean to you?
Man, Mike Tyson means everything to me, man. I was reading his book during this offseason, Undisputed Truth. You should check it out if you haven't. It's probably the longest chapter. It took me 3 hours to read one chapter, like no joke. But, well, that's a little exaggerated, but that's how long his book is. That shirt right there was when he was the youngest undisputed champion right there when he beat Larry Holmes and Michael Spinks, Trump Plaza, and he became the youngest champion to do that, to win all three belts in different classes. That show right there meant to me like, hey man, it's gonna be a battle right here. So if you want to be the guy, you want to be the man, you'll be like Michael Tyson, you better go out there and just dominate, strike fear to your opponents, and be relentless. Because everybody knows when you see Mike Tyson, you know he's gonna come with some stuff.
Are you excited to watch him at 54 years old get in there with Roy Jones Jr.?
Man, he's about to murder that guy, man. I don't know why he signed up for that. I don't know why he signed up for that. You couldn't pay me enough to get knocked out by Mike Tyson. Well,
I think the good news is they've agreed not to take each other's heads off. They're going to wear headgear and giant gloves, so it's not going to be like prime Mike Tyson.
Hey, you don't know. Mike Tyson maybe get through that headgear. He may be able to.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Hey, quickly, just give me a thought on the defense because, man, we look at some of the names on here, and there are so many star players on this defense. There's so much speed, yet, you know, it's only two games into the season, but it feels like it hasn't gelled yet. We've seen them give up some, you know, pretty big chunks of yardage to the opposing team so far. What's your take on how this team has played defensively so far?
I feel like we've been playing great. You know, our tackling is getting a lot better. We just got to continue to keep getting better in practice, you know, at the little things, you know, finishing on the ball when it's thrown through quarterback and, you know, finishing on the quarterback when we get to the quarterback sacks as well. So I feel like we're slowly getting better, but, you know, we're taking the right strides and we're going the right direction to being one of the best defenses in the league.
Hey, last thing I have for you, Ugo, is your clothing line. I'd like to find out more about that. I looked at your Twitter timeline there, and I'm wondering how you got into that and how it's going.
Man, during COVID, it's funny you asked that because during COVID, I was just thinking about stuff, you know. I was like, man, I have such a unique name. I should get a logo made, you know, because, like, if you see Russell Wilson, his is like a 3 with the R and the W in it. So I'm like, man, I think I can get a cool logo. So I hit up my guy, Will, and he's like, I can make you a logo. And he's trying to make – he had different samples and stuff. Like, I didn't like it. He made, like, Ugo at the number 28, and I'm like, I didn't like it. And some other stuff, too. But when he showed me the football one, I was like, yeah, that's the one. Like, that is the one. And you can see my name within the football. But I gave a hoodie to my coach. He said, I told him, like, I put a hoodie in your locker. He said, you did? I was like, yeah. It has my logo on it. He said, I seen you wearing it, but I thought it was just a football. He said, I didn't know your name was in it. I'm like, yeah, that's the, you know, that's the double image in it, you know. So I get a lot of compliments in public and stuff too. Oh, I like that logo. Even when I'm in the airport, I like that logo. That's pretty cool. But they don't, you know, everybody thinks it's a football. But most people think it's a football, but it's really my name.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool. Hey, quickly, before we let you go, Ugo, you brought up Russell. You go up against him in practice. He's been on fire, to say the very least. What is it like to watch him and the offense doing what they're doing through two games?
I love watching Russ, man. The stuff that he does, a lot of quarterbacks can't do. What he escapes out of, him be able to run the ball too as well. You know, it's just, I've never seen that out of a quarterback, you know, and going against him in practice. Like, I try my hardest to pick him up. I even get in his head a little bit in practice, but, you know, my words don't discourage him at all. So I really try my hardest, you know, but he just always, you know, overcomes any adversity.
Ugo Amadi of your Seattle Seahawks coming off a big win over the Patriots. We appreciate you taking the time, man. Congrats on what was a huge win. Hopefully we're talking again about more wins, piling these things up, and just enjoying this season. Thanks so much, man.
Man, thank you guys for having me again.
There you go. Ugo Amadi, easy to like that guy. Really nice guy and played pretty well last night. Meanwhile, the Seahawks defense made the game-winning stop, but is there concern about them moving forward? We'll talk about this defense coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will turn you over to the Mariners pregame show. There's another guest in studio with us here, Dave. Dave's done some artwork. Dave's got a gift. He's got some untapped talent that people aren't really aware of. It's your sense of humor along with your art skills.
I like doing drawings.
Drawings. And he's done one on a big head of Danny O'Neill sitting in between us. So check that out if you're not on the stream, 710sports.com, and click Watch Live. All right, so we talked about all the good stuff. We talked about this offense being electric. 35 points against the best secondary, 5 touchdown passes against the best secondary, Bill Belichick, all that good stuff. We got to talk about the defense, because even with Marquise Blair and Bruce Irvin, who are both out for the season, in case you missed that, this was not a good defense in terms of the pass rush, in terms of the pressure. And I really tried to focus this week, Dave, because you've talked often about quarterbacks really getting rid of that ball quickly, so there not being a lot of time. That was not the case last night at all. Cam Newton had all the time in the world, and they were giving up big chunk plays
that, I mean, you know, another 400-plus yard night in terms of offense given up, 30 points. You had to score 35 to beat somebody. How concerned should we be?
Well, I mean, look, there's some things that need to be tightened up. I was kind of, you know, depressed watching the pass rush, especially on that last drive, and they had to, you know, they had to send a couple of times. They sent blitzes, and Bobby Wagner is really good. But I just, you know, they doubled Jaron Reed a lot, and then now without Bruce Irvin, I do think Benson Mayoa is talented, but. Yeah, it was, and then the two times they had a chance, they slid off of Cam Newton. One was Jamal Adams. I say this about Adams, though. He is so athletic and good that he gets himself close to a lot of tackles that other guys wouldn't even be near. So that part is, you know, a little bit, you have to adjust for that a little bit. But then Benson Mayoa wasn't able to get home. And, yeah, that part was pretty discouraging because, I mean, look, Cam Newton threw for 400 yards. And, you know, did end up getting an interception. And I just think Quentin Dunbar is getting better and better and better. But, you know, it's, there's lots of yards. But kind of saw them playing sort of the way that they did last year, where they're not going to get beat deep. But there it seems like there's just a lot of chunk plays. Now, they're taking some shots, and they're blitzing and things like that. So, you know, that stuff has to get tightened up, though, because you're looking at they had – plays of 49, 33, 26, 22, 20, 19, 18, 17, 18, 70. I mean, it just, you know, now the Seahawks are doing that on offense, but yeah, it's something, I guess I thought it was going to be a little bit tighter, but I'll say this for most teams, you know, you're still trying to figure out, you know, what you're doing playing together. It's still kind of preseason, really.
Right.
So, but you know, yeah, it was kind of discouraging to see that last drive that Cam Newton. Now he made plays with his legs too, but yeah, they weren't. Nobody was getting much pressure on him.
Well, I cut him slack for last night, just like I did last week. I think there's more potential there this year. Last year they had a superstar with Clowney, and the defense wasn't that good. So far, with a superstar in Jamal Adams, the defense overall hasn't been that good, but. Garbage time yards for Matt Ryan and the Falcons last week. And then this week, I give him a mulligan on this one, a golf show reference there for you, Bob, because of having the injuries. And they had to adjust on the fly. When you lose Marquise Blair, you lost Quandre Diggs, then you lose Irvin. And so you're in a situation where you're trying to adjust on the fly, and I think it was difficult for those guys. Pete Carroll acknowledged as much. So I think it'll be a little bit better this week. But, Dave, what do you think they should do? We know that Ugo Amadi is going to take over at the nickel spot, but what about Bruce Irvin? I mean, who's going to be the new pass rusher to fill his spot? And then linebacker-wise, playing that Sam position, you think it's going to be KJ? You think it's going to be Brooks? You think maybe they'll bring Kendricks back? I mean, they do have some options.
Well, and they got Cody Barton. So, I mean, I don't worry at all about – I mean, well, I do. I mean, you're missing – Bruce Irvin's a really good linebacker. He made another really good play in the running game the other day and or last night. So you're going to miss him, but still, they've got plenty there. I mean, that's what Cody played last year. He played strong side linebacker, and then – you know, you can always put KJ over there. He can play anywhere. And, you know, and I think, you know, you heard Pete kind of allude to that, where that's going to be the plan, that they're going to bring Jordan Brooks in a little bit more. He's also an edge rusher. You know, we talked earlier about possibly going after Clay Matthews, but yeah, it's been tough to watch. You know, I mean, some of that, you know, the pass rush and just the lack of it. I just like to think that it's coming on, and that they're gonna, you know, that they're gonna be able to get there eventually. But what did they even get a hit on Cam? I know there was a couple.
They had one sack by Adams.
Yeah, that's right, and that was where he ran. Right, he took off.
Yeah.
I think towards the line of scrimmage, so it almost looked like a tackle for loss. But and then just a couple of them last week, and you know now Jamal Adams has two sacks already.
Yeah,
so, I mean, and that's great, but you'd like to see it, you know, coming. I was looking at Pittsburgh; they had 7 sacks yesterday.
Jeez.
So, and then they had 3 against the Giants. So, but that's how they're built. This is more of a defensive back team here. But look, Pittsburgh has a really good defense. But you know, it's just, you know, 3 sacks in 2 games. We'll see if they get the pass rush going.
Yeah, and Jim, everybody keeps saying that, oh, it's all garbage time against the Falcons. That's not true. It's not true. They gave up 240 yards at the half. and they were only up by two at that point. So it wasn't like they had this substantial lead and they would just, you know, took their foot off the gas. So that simply just was not accurate. You know, the Falcons were doing their thing against them, and they do have great receivers. So you obviously give credit to the opposition. But, you know, they got torn apart again in this game, and that's – I understand it's just two games, and I'm not going to flip out and go, well, they're a disaster. But what I can say with a fair amount of certainty is it's very clear the offense will carry this team once again like it did last year, that they're going to lean – much like they did in the years where they leaned on the defense year in, year out, leading the league in points allowed. They were the top-rated defense for, was it 4 years or 5 years in a row?
Four, yeah.
And they were able to lean on them offensively. They could be conservative. Yeah. They could not take chances, and they leaned on them. I think the roles have absolutely been reversed. It started last year. It's continuing this year. I hope the defense gets better. But right now, I think it's you're looking at another version of last year where you're relying on the defense or the offense to outscore the other team in a big way. Because, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to give up 30 a game, but they haven't given you any indication they're going to hold teams to 15, 16, 17 in the teens somewhere.
Well, if you can get takeaways, I mean, that's the thing that will be huge for them. So,
yeah. So we'll definitely talk more about that. Meanwhile, you got the Mariners game coming up. Marco Gonzalez taking on Lance McCullers Jr. tonight. First pitch at 6:10. Want to thank our guest John Clayton and Ugo Amadi. If you missed any of it, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Just click that podcast button, scroll down to our picture, click on that. Everything you missed is waiting there for you each and every single day. We're going to be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.